Don't be shy. Step a little closer. I've been waiting to welcome you to Fright Radio. The name is Reaper. Radio Reaper. I have much to tell. It's enough to make someone scream. What a coincidence. Let's step inside, shall we?
Welcome to the holiday spooktacular edition of Fright Radio. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited. This is our third episode. The holiday season is upon us, and we have a full show with segments by Ghoulish Cop, The Toy Haunter, Chris and Jeff Davis, Roxy Blue, The Boneyard Creep, and so much more, and our interview with Devil's Chariot. Now, I just wanted to get down to some quick big news to start the show with. And that's our teaming with Haunt Nation Magazine. Gary Berger at Haunt Nation Magazine and I have been talking, and I'm really excited to share this news with you guys. I think it's going to be a great partnership with the magazine. It's something I've been waiting to burst out and scream and tell everybody for a while now. Gary and I, we've been talking a lot, and I think it's going to be a good platform. We'll be able to share information with him. He'll be able to share information with us this coming January edition of Haunt Nation Magazine. You'll be able to start seeing some news and some ads for Fright Radio in the magazine, and we'll be sharing any news and information that he wants to send over to Fright Radio as well. So, and even at Transworld, which Fright Radio is looking to attend, we'll be working together with Gary Berger on the floor to try to bring you some, you know, firsthand interviews, and it's going to be a really great partnership, so I'm looking forward to that. So make sure you check out Haunt Nation Magazine if you haven't already. It's a free e-zine that you can download online. All you have to do is sign up on hauntnationmagazine.com. And also check him out on Facebook for Haunt Nation Magazine. He's got a prop challenge contest that's running right now. He does all sorts of great things with the magazine. He's a good friend of ours, and this is definitely something that we've been looking forward to. Now, in addition to the Haunt Nation Magazine news, I also have the drawing for this month for the free Fright Radio t-shirt giveaway. We did a little contest a couple weeks back just to post some comments on some of the forums that we've been talking about the Fright Radio t-shirt, and I want to pull the winner. And that winner is Jamie Henry Huggins. So Jamie Henry Huggins, if you're listening to this right now, you just won yourself a Fright Radio t-shirt. Have a scary and happy holidays from Fright Radio. I just want to say we appreciate all the listeners listening to this show. If it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't be doing this. So we appreciate everything that you guys do for us. So without further ado, let's kick off the Holiday Spooktacular show. And again, guys, have a great and scary holiday. I can't wait for the new year. There's so much in store for Fright Radio, and we look forward to keeping up with the shows, making them bigger, making them better. And again, if you have any questions, comments, anything to help out the show, you can write us at frightradiopodcast@gmail.com. We're always looking forward to listening to what you guys have to say about the show, because, again, this is a show for you guys. So if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be here doing this. So have a scary Christmas and happy holidays to all. Here we go with the show.
Oh, hello, creeps. You're just in time. My little Cryptmas party is about to begin. I just love this time of year. There's nothing quite like it. Yuletide carols, sleigh bells, Jack Frost roasting on an open fire. Where was I? Oh yes, Cryptmas. How about we kick off the celebration with one of my favorite Ghoultide ditties?
Oh,
with parts of Charlie. Fa la 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 la. Make the Yuletide grace and gnarly. Fa la 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 la. Stocking stuffed with ears and fingers. Fa la 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 la. Chop from all those caroling singers. Fa la 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 la. Drape the hearth with chunks of Barney. Fa la 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 la. Bits of Bruce and hunks of Arnie. Fa la 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 la. Hang the crypt with spleens and kidneys. Fa la 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 la. Use Ramones and then use Sydney's. Fa la 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 la. Raise the tree and bring the ladder. Fa la 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 la. It off with gills called bladder. Fa la 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 la. Grinning skulls in festive poses. Fa la 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 la. Strings of toes and nipped off noses. Fa la 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 la. Who needs mistletoe and holly? Fa la 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 la. When we could just dismember Wally. Fa la 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 la. Have the whole place decorated. Fa la 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 la. With the parts we've amputated. Fa la 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 la.
You've heard the Christmas jingle. He's making a list. He's checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Blah, blah, blah. Well, there's a reason Santa's naming names. He's got a helper on his appointed round. And it's not some pointy-eared elf in a green suit, but rather a hideous goat-headed creature, some 7 feet tall, hairy, with bulging eyes, cloven hooves, horns, and a long whip-like tongue. His name? Krampus. The Christmas Devil. Yes, jolly old Kris Kringle leaves the dirty work to his wingman. While Santa's flying over the skies in his sleigh with 8 tiny reindeer, visiting all the good little boys and girls, Krampus is using the list that Santa wrote up, the one dropping the dime on everyone who is naughty, and paying them a visit, one which they are not likely to forget. Krampus, you see, rains hellfire down on juvenile miscreants. Before we became a panty-waisted, politically correct society that felt the need to boost a wayward kid's self-esteem, no matter how delinquent they were, Krampus would beat their hides with birch switches, spank them, and even chain them up to eventually be spirited away to a fiery lair where they would continue to be punished until they were repented. Now that's the way to get a kid to fall in line. Today we let kids play sports, not keep score, and give them trophies just for showing up, and generally treat them like they're fragile little teacups that will chip and break if they're used. There's a reason kids no longer fear being put on the naughty list or getting a lump of coal in their stocking. We've spared the rod and spoiled the child. The fear of the Christmas devil is much better. The Santa Claus story, as we know, developed from the wanderings of the 4th century bishop St. Nicholas, who, amongst many other miracles attributed to him, including raising the dead, and not just dead, but chopped up and prepared to be served in a meat pie, would wander the streets of Lycia, today's modern-day Turkey, and secretly leave coins in the shoes of the poorest folk in town. He is celebrated in many countries on December 5th, the day before he is said to appear with his gifts. Krampus, on the other hand, whose name derives from the Germanic Krampen, or claw, is not so benevolent. His story traces its roots back to pre-Christianity, to pagan rituals associated with the oncoming of winter. But with the melding of many of these traditions into Christianity, particularly in Germanic folklore, he has become the opposite of St. Nicholas. While there are traces of lineage in St. Nicholas descending from the Norse god Thor, and he looks nothing like Chris Hemsworth in the movie, as he had a long flowing white beard and rode through the skies in a chariot. Krampus is descended from the Norse god Loki, who reveled in mischief and evil and is often represented as having horns. It's noteworthy he is also the father of Hel, a woman who presided over the realm of the same name and receives the dead. So to go to hell means to die. Thus, St. Nicholas arrives on December 6th giving out gifts, but Krampus is said to roam the streets the night before on December 5th, Krampus Night, or Krampusnacht in German, meting out his justice by whipping bad boys and girls. Although it was popular for men to dress up as Krampus to scare children, the practice came to an abrupt halt during the Inquisition, as it was heresy to impersonate an evil spirit. But the traditions lived on quietly, and while they've ebbed and flowed over time, rising in popularity such as during the 16th and 17th centuries, and fading during times of great upheaval such as during the Second World War, when the Nazis looked askance on such portrayals, Krampus is making a comeback today in popular culture and in festivals held in his honor. Krampuslauf, or Krampus runs, are held all across Europe. So yes, you better watch out, you better not cry, and you better not pout, because I'll tell you why. It's not that Santa Claus is coming to town, but rather his evil twin, Krampus, and he's looking to whip you, chain you, and carry you away to his fiery lair. Gruß von Krampus.
Grandpa, I want the truth about Christmas.
If it's the truth you want, then it's the scary truth you're gonna have.
According to the Book of Claus, Santa, Satan's only son, lost a bet and was forced to spread Christmas cheer. But now, all bets are off.
Santa?
Yes, there is a Santa Claus.
Santa Claus is not a myth or a legend. He's real. Only he's not bearing gifts and presents anymore.
Christmas can sure scare the dickens out of people.
He's scary yet educational.
I'm just trying to spread a little Yuletide fear.
Are you saying Santa is offing everyone who's naughty and nice?
Oh my God! Nicholas shot him!
You shot Santa?
This holiday season.
Ho, ho, ho!
Lock your doors. Bolt the windows.
Oh, Grandpa got run over by a reindeer.
Everyone stand back. Things are about to get a little messy.
And block the chimney. Cause naughty or nice, Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa's sleigh.
Go ahead, kid. Let's see what Santa got you.
I hate children.
The Boneyard.
Season's greeting, haunters. This is the Boneyard Creep. And I've got a classic tale for you tonight, spun in a different way. I hope you enjoy. It's entitled, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the haunt, not a skelly was clanking, but rather looking quite gaunt. The skulls were nestled all snug in a box, the countdown to Halloween clock once again going tick-tock. Props and supplies all stored under the stairs. Crows and PVC candles neatly stacked in organized layers. Not being able to shove another spider in there, I went to my garage to get me some air. With the last of my spooks, a severed head, I thought it would be my last to store before turning into bed. Flicking the switch to shed some light, I wasn't quite ready to be served such a fright. When out of the garage rafters, there arose such a clatter. I dropped the corpse head and hit the floor with a splatter. Tripping over a tombstone I carved just the other day, Something in the rafters was looking to play. The full moon beam shining through the only glass, casting shadows and doubts I was hoping wouldn't last. When from the corner of my eye what would appear? Something to make the greatest of haunters shiver in fear. The flying crane ghost, hanging with care, began to float and move through the air. Coming at me, the motor with no power, I sat in the corner. I could do nothing but cower. Just when I thought it wouldn't get any worse, it started to moan and wail in a ghostly verse. Moving closer and closer, me evacuating my bum, I reached for the nearest thing to me, my trusty heat gun. Turning it on, I broke the cardinal rule. Never place your hand in front of it like a rookie fool. Burning my hand, I didn't know what was worse. Maybe I should have grabbed for my X-Acto knife first. My heat gun now laying in pieces on the floor, I was beginning to think I should make a run for the door. With green eyes glowing and swaying up and down, I was shivering in the corner, my shorts now quite brown. Maybe it was the 12-pack of beer I just drank. I wasn't even thinking this could be a prank. Maybe feeling sorry, and maybe I had had enough, the trickster climbed down after treating me so rough. Down they slid, coming down from the rafters, in a barrage of chuckles and recognizable laughter. Squinting to see who was trying to end my life, I was both relieved and pissed to see it was my wife. "Not scary enough to be in your haunt, huh?" she asked with glee. "What is that strange odor coming from your direction? Could it be pee?" Knowing that she had gotten the best of me, she made me write this down for all to see. So as you hear this before you sleep, know that I wish you the very merriest of Christmas from the Boneyard Creep. Merry Christmas to all, and happy holidays. Have a great new year. Sleep well.
This time. Christmas is so fine.
It's ours this time, and won't the children be surprised?
It's ours this time.
Making Christmas.
Time to give them something fun they'll talk about for years to come.
Let's have a cheer
from everyone.
It's time to party.
Making Christmas. Snakes and mice get wrapped up so nice with spider legs and pretty bones.
It's ours this time.
All together dance and this is all our tricks. We're making Christmas time.
Here comes Jack.
I don't believe what's happening to me. My hopes, my dreams, my fantasies.
Won't they be impressed? I am a genius. See how I transform this old rat into a most delightful hat.
My compliments from me to you on this, your most intriguing hat. Consider, though, this substitute, a bat in place of this old rat. No, that's all wrong. This thing will never make a present. It's been dead for much too long. Try something fresher, something pleasant. Try again, don't give up!
All together, bat and this, with all our tricks, we're making Christmas time.
Thank you.
toy haunter.
Hello, horror fans. The Toy Haunter is thrilled to bring a very scary Christmas episode to Fright Radio. In this episode, I will bring you my top 10 favorite horror-related toy releases of 2013. It has been an awesome year of releases, so let's jump right in with the number 10 release of 2013. At number 10, we have the Predator Series 10 by NECA. In this line, NECA brings back a line of Predators that Kenner took the liberty of creating for their line back in the 1990s. Kenner padded their line with all sorts of cartoony-looking Predators to appeal to the younger audience, and NECA has taken those toys from the cartoon world to the real world. Finally, some excitement infused back into the line of the Predator toys. At number 9, we have the Psycho Living Dead dolls. It's been over 50 years since it was released, and Psycho, perhaps, has never been more popular than right now with the recent airing of AMC's first season of Bates Motel, a series that introduced Norman Bates to a whole new generation. Living Dead has brought us both Bates and his well-known victim, Marion Crane. It's an homage to the iconic shower scene, so don't miss out on this captivating set. At number 8, we have the Alien Reaction Figures by Super 7. Long story short, Kenner back in 1979 planned on releasing a line of Alien toys on the heels of the release of their 18-inch Xenomorph. Sorry, forgot what it was called there. Though prototypes were whipped out, the line was ultimately tossed out the window amid controversy and parental outrage over the movie being marketed to children. It was the 18-inch toy that spawned all the outrage, and Kenner decided to just do away with all things Alien to avoid any further complaints. Out of nowhere, along comes this company called Super 7, who announced that they would be resurrecting the line of toys for 2013. These toys have a throwback look, as they are made off of the 1979 prototype, so check them out because these things are pretty sweet. At number 7, we have the Carrie action figures by NECA. This marks the first time Carrie has ever been given the toy treatment in any of her forms, and I think it's a pretty cool thing, which makes these worth the purchase. Though they were supposed to be released alongside the movie in March, the movie's premiere date was moved to October, which is when those two figures were released. And they are pretty cool, so make sure you go buy those in Toys R Us or wherever you can find them when you do see them, because they are a very rare and limited edition. At number 6, we have the Trick or Treat vinyl toy made by Funko. Now, I know a lot of horror fans aren't exactly comfortable with their favorite cinematic monsters being turned into cute and cuddly characters, but I'm personally a fan of what Funko has done the last couple of years by bringing these things and making them their pop line. Now, this pop vinyl line is growing rapidly, especially in the latter portion of the year. Pennywise, Chucky, Ash, Captain Spaulding, Jigsaw, those are all figures that came out this year, but this one is my favorite because I love the Trick or Treat movie, I love Sam, and who quite frankly doesn't have to go out of his way to be cute, even though he's going for the jugular with his razor sharp pumpkin pop, he's still pretty damn good looking, even though he is very kid friendly. At number 5, we have the Munster Series 2 made by Diamond Select Toys. In this line, Herman, Lily, and the Bizarre Little Family are no strangers to the world of toys, which have been hitting shelves since 1964 when they first hit the market. Diamond Select now owns the licensing rights, and they have their sights on set on whipping up some pretty cool-looking Munster sets, in addition to the black-and-white box set that they released earlier this year, and a two-pack containing Marilyn Eddy. In September, the Series 2 line was released, and added to the line are the new episode-specific versions of Herman, Lily, and Grandpa, as well as a surprise appearance by Gilman. I mean, Uncle Gilbert, actually, is what we should call him. Coolest of all, these four figures come with a piece of the infamous Munster Staircase, which, when you put it together, it builds up to complete it, and it also includes their pet dog, Spot. So that's also a first in the line. Now, at number four, we have a 10-inch Daryl Dixon figure by McFarlane. Like all the other Walking Dead toys, AMC is really, they're milking the cash in with all of these toys that are being released for this this TV show line. And this new 10-inch Daryl is by far one of the best. He's got his crossbow, and he's standing there just ready to shoot. And they're really milking the Daryl Dixon character because he has kind of become the breakout star of the series. Now, there are a few other 10-inch figures being created. The Governor, Carl Andrea, also Daryl's brother, is going to be released soon, if not already. And I just got to tell you guys got to snatch this one up fast before it skyrockets in value. Because on eBay, if you've seen the first release of the 10-inch Daryl Dixon figure, these things are going for crazy amounts of money. So if you see the second 10-inch Daryl Dixon, make sure you grab that one, because this one is by far better than the first, which nobody thought could be done. Now, at number three, and I talked about this in the last Fright Radio episode, are the Hot Wheels Universal Monsters release cars. So we have the Creature from the Black Lagoon, we have the Bride of Frankenstein, you have Frankenstein, we also have the Mummy, we have the Wolfman, we have Dracula, and these things are extremely hard to find, I must tell you. These things were released with the G case, and they just went fast, and they're just impossible to find on store shelves now. So if you are a Universal Monster fan and you do want to have this line in your collection, you're going to have to try eBay or somewhere else, or a specialty toy shop that may sell this kind of on the secondary market, because they are just out of Target and Walmart and all the regular stores that would normally have these. Now, at number two, we have a very new release, the Twilight Zone Talking Tina doll, in color. So Talking Tina is back again, and this time to stay. This authentically reproduced Talking Tina doll replica is, she's in color from the Twilight Zone series, and is a lifelike replica that stands 18 inches tall and features rotocast vinyl head, arms, and legs. She has a soft fabric body, fabric clothing, rooted hair, eyelids that open and close, and a talking mechanism. Now, I know you Twilight Zone fans will remember Talking Tina from, I believe, season one. She was very iconic, and a lot of kids wanted this doll, and adults wanted this doll, and I think there was a line made that was very rare. Well, this line is a second line that is released, and is extremely rare as well, and I've been hunting this now for about 3 weeks, and I haven't found her on the shelves. So do not miss out on this Talking Tina Twilight Zone release doll that was just released towards the end of November. And finally, we are at number one. At number one, we have video game Freddy Krueger action figure, and he is being released this month. I haven't seen him released yet, but I am definitely keeping my eye out. So, directly out of an 8-bit video game, A Nightmare on Elm Street, the Nightmare on Elm Street video game Freddy Krueger action figure is the perfect companion to the piece from Friday the 13th, Jason, that was released at San Diego Comic-Con in summer of this year. And the Jason doll was the absolute hottest release of that event. So to go along with Freddy Krueger, Jason, they will share the number one spot with this video game release by NECA. Now, in 1989, Nightmare on Elm Street was released on the Nintendo Entertainment System and immediately became a cult classic. This amazing action figure of Freddy is fully articulated, 7-inch action figure, done up with the truly horrifying video game style. This awesome figure comes with a special window box packaging, open flap to recreate the look and feel of a classic 1989 video game package, and this thing just kicks ass. So this Freddy Krueger and the Jason doll, those things, I guess I should say figure and not doll, but they are definitely by far my number one favorite releases of 2013. These things are badass, and they look like the 8-bit video game, figures that were in the video games. They just look so cool. The box looks like a video game box. I just can't say how cool these things are. So you guys definitely have to check them out. It might be something that you have to find on eBay, but enjoy hunting in stores and specialty comic stores for these figures, because these things are just amazing. So there you have it. The Toy Haunters Top 10 Releases of 2013. All of these releases are rare and hard to find, so if you see them in stores, make sure you grab them quick. I want to wish everyone a happy holiday and a safe new year. Thank you for all your support in 2013, and I can't wait for an exciting year of haunting and toy hunting in 2014. Scare you later.
'Twas the night before Christmas. All were hiding in fear, 'cause Santa's gone crazy. All he's spreading is fear. He's slaughtered the elves and Mrs. Claus, too. He's cooked all the reindeer. He's made Rudolph's stew. Why did Santa go bonkers? We may never know. Was it too many cookies? Did he eat yellow snow? Now he's hunting the naughty and also the nice. But he hasn't got presents. Now he carries a knife. There came from the yard such a horrible clatter. It was Santa himself, with gore all a-splatter. As he came toward the door with a chainsaw in hand, I lay on the floor thinking this was the end. That's when I awoke. I was still in my bed. The house was still quiet. 'Twas all in my head. No more Jason or Freddy will I watch late at night. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good fright.
The Davises present.
'Twas a long time ago, longer now than it seems, in a place that perhaps you've seen in your dreams, for the story that you are about to be told took place in the holiday worlds of old. Now, you probably wondered where holidays come from. If you haven't, I'd say it's time you begun.
Hi, this is Jeff Davis.
And Chris Davis.
We're the Davis Graveyard. With the HauntCon coming up in end of January in Houston, we thought we'd talk a little bit about going to conventions and what our experience was like and what we think about Halloween conventions.
Because now starts Halloween convention season.
A lot of them are in the spring. It's always in the time of year when you're not working on your Halloween stuff, so a lot of people go to those conventions. They go to the costume balls and check out the vendors. We started going to conventions probably 2005, so
Haunt-X,
it's been 12 years, 7 or 8 years.
8 years,
like,
yeah.
8 years. When we first went, the very first one we ever went to, we didn't know what to expect, so we didn't buy any of the extra stuff. We just paid for the entrance into the convention.
And their hotel room, we pretty much just stuck to ourselves.
Yeah, so we went up to our room afterwards when we went to the classes and talked, but we didn't go to the costume ball, we didn't go on the tours. And the next time that we went, I think that was Haunt-X, that's no longer around, it was in L.A. Okay. Then we went to HauntCon the next year and said, well, then that year we're going to buy everything. We're going to buy the tours, we're going to go to the costume ball, and we've been doing it ever since.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing like coming down, I think, at Haunt-X, and we realized that all these people were talking about this great costume ball they were at last night. We're like, we should have gone. We've since learned our lesson now. We try to, even when people email us and say things like, well, should I get tickets for this? And I said, if you can afford it, get tickets to everything, because you get to hang with the people, and that's the best part about it, especially the tours. You know, you're closed on a certain amount of time on a tour bus with some people that you're forced to talk to. You're not forced to, because they all love Halloween like you do. You just meet some of the coolest people doing this. I mean,
we have some of our closest friends that are people that we met through Halloween conventions, and some of the, you know, the vendors that we work with and that we buy products from are all people that we've met through conventions. But even that first time that we went, the most valuable thing that we learned at a convention was just the free education.
Right.
Just attending seminars from other fellow home haunters to pro haunters to vendors. They all have something interesting to talk about and lots of really good stuff. And there's so much going on, you can kind of pick and choose what you want to see.
Right. We split up every once in a while, so we both want to see something at the same time. So
prop controller programming to lighting to costuming and makeup, all kinds of stuff. Even sometimes just about design and
HauntCon, it probably was that HauntCon that we actually went to a Bad Boy Scenic Design foam texturing class. Mm-hmm. And that took Davis Graveyard from one place to a gigantic leap forward where we understood. That's how we built the first facade we had on the garage. The church facade, which, you know, it seems simple now compared to the Abbey, but that was monumentous for us to be able to pull that off. I mean, to pull a facade off and panel, I think, what at the time it was like 20-something panels, which just seems silly small now, but at the time that was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, but we learned those foam texturing techniques from a class at HauntCon. And
we're still really good friends with Mike Crossert from Bad Boys to this day.
And Bert with Mini Spotlight before he was with Mini Spotlight. And, you know, Froggy's Fog and Darklight. Lights, Quant at Darklight. There's just so many people we've met over the years that have been so useful. I would say that if you're thinking about going to a convention or you've only gone once and wanted to do it again, it changed the way we do Halloween completely. And it gave us bigger, it was probably as big if not bigger than the dawn of the internet. We learned a lot on the internet, we still do, but you network so much more at a convention.
You do.
And you get to see the latest and greatest techniques and products that are coming out, so it gives you new ideas for the next year. Mm-hmm. And you make such good friends and so many lifelong connections. I mean, we communicate with people all over the country because we met them at a convention one year.
Yeah, you'd be surprised how many people know you when you go somewhere, you know, internet now. You'll be on a bus and be like, oh, you do that yard haunt. You know, I've met so many yard haunt friends. By going to the convention, sitting on tour bus, go, oh yeah, I know your stuff, you know, and they go, oh, I know your stuff, and that's, you know, kind of starts these great conversations. And the other thing when we talked about conventions too, which we've always tried to tell people, I know sometimes it seems, sometimes you have no choice, but the cost effective to not stay wherever the convention is or where most people are staying, like stay at a really cheap motel somewhere else. But the thing about it is that you just miss the networking of being in the hotel lobby and hanging with everybody and sitting in the bar or, you know, everybody going up to somebody's room and that kind of stuff. I mean, it's why we spend the extra money now to be able to go up and do that so that we're at the hotel, wherever the most popular one happens to be for the convention, just for the networking alone.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of one of the nice things about the conventions, whether it's HauntCon or Midwest Haunters or West Coast Haunters Convention. Mm-hmm.
Trans World.
It's Midwest, all about the networking and connections that you make with the people there. It's kind of like a big family reunion every year.
That's what we call it. Yeah,
get to meet all your haunter family. You know, for that one trip that you do a year, and sometimes people don't go every single year, so it could be a couple years before you get back to seeing somebody again. But it's that personal touch. It's not like the sterile conventions. You know, the business conventions.
Yeah, very different.
You know, haunters like to party, like to have a good time, enjoy themselves. We're getting a chance to let our hair down because we just came off of a, you know, stressful haunt season. So,
You actually get to wear your Halloween costume and have a party rather than having to be running your own haunt, which we always think is a lot of fun that, you know, you can't do on Halloween as much because you're actually running your own event. So that's always kind of fun to do that.
And you get a chance. The other thing that a lot of the haunts do, they do tours of the local haunts or tours and haunts in nearby areas. And even though Chris and I are not pro haunters and don't run a professional haunted house, you still get a lot of really good information out of seeing somebody else's haunted house, see the detail they do, how they create things, talk to the owner about how he runs it, what his theme's about.
Or she.
So there's some There were lots of good. I always tell people, even if they don't run a pro haunt, it's worth going on the haunt tour or two just to check it out, see what it's all about. But that's probably enough for tonight. We just wanted to talk a little bit about conventions and to give you guys something to think about. So happy haunting. Hope to see you at one of the conventions this year.
Yep.
We'll talk to you later.
Haunting interviews.
Craig, I want to thank you for being a part of Fright Radio. We have Mr. Craig Schreiber on the phone. Some of you may know him as Devil's Chariot, the Haunted Helzondo. So, Craig, thanks for joining us tonight on what's going to be our third episode of Fright Radio. How you doing?
Good.
So, I mean, I've been... I know we're all just regular old people, home haunters at home, but I've been a fan of yours for a while since I first stumbled across your blog and Haunted Tiki Island back in the, you know, I don't know, how many years ago was that now?
2009, that was last year, so like yeah. 3 or 4?
Yeah, I was amazed by that because I was looking for, it's almost about the same time I've always been doing a display myself, but I was really getting more into it and trying to build my own things then. When I came across yours, it blew me away because, I mean, what I like most about what you did is most, if not everything that you create is all handmade. I mean, everything is from you and from everyone that helps you out. So how did you really get started into it and what made your decision to start with a theme like Haunted Tiki Island?
So what we used to do before we started haunting for real is my wife's family would get together, her brothers and sisters, at their mom's house, and we'd just, you know, dress up and hand out candy and try and scare people over the hedge or whatever, but we didn't have a haunt. We just had, you know, like a fog machine and a black light and a couple skulls or whatever. And we carve like maybe 20 jack-o'-lanterns, go crazy on that. And then, you know, after we're clean up, we'd all be sitting on the porch and people would be smoking or whatever and relaxing and just talking about, oh yeah, it'd be really cool to do something next year, like a tiki thing. Because, my mother-in-law, Patty, which is at her house, was carving tikis as a hobby. And she's like, yeah, it'd be cool. Let's do a tiki theme. And then my brother-in-law and sister-in-law are both, like, into tattoos and tikis and hot rods and stuff. So they're like, yeah, cool. So, you know, but we kind of did that every year and then never did anything about it. And then, you know, I think it was September of 2007, I decided, well, I'm just going to do it. So I've been, you know, reading all these how-tos on the internet, not building them, you know, doing anything. They're just kind of building up in my head. So I started out making a skull mold as the first one because I was like, we need a tiki head. We need a bunch of skulls on sticks. And we need a monkey or something. That was my first plan, so... I made a skull mold and we made a bunch of foam heads and painted them all up. And we drove over, you know, out into the canyons to cut bamboo down because it grows all along the streams in Southern California. So we just took a truck and, like, would run out with cordless tools and cut them down and then run away because we weren't sure if it was illegal or not.
You're always looking over your shoulder, huh?
Yeah, or we didn't even know if we were on private property. And I was like, just get in the car. And I hunted down a sheet of blue foam. It was 2 feet by 8 feet and cost me like $75 because we don't really have that kind of foam in Southern California, so I had to go to a specialty foam place.
So you don't have any kind of hardware store near there that has, you know, regular insulation foam or nothing like that?
No, well, you know, it's like 80 degrees to 120 out here, so we don't really insulate much. You know, that would be overkill, that the pink and blue foam.
Yeah. I could always ship some out to you.
Well, there's some people out here who talked Home Depot into carrying it in Simi Valley.
Yeah.
And one other place, I think Riverside or something. All haunters. Haunters just kept calling and saying, get it.
If they only knew the people that were walking around their store that were buying items that were not really meant to be used for what their real purposes were for, it'd be amazing probably to them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always looking for stuff, and it's like, I'm just staring at stuff, kind of trying to find a solution to something I'm trying to build. I don't even know what these parts are or what they're for. Someone's like, do you need help? And I'm like, I want to say yes, but then I know that if I tell them what I'm doing, they're just going to be, like, confused and scared. So
I had to do that once. And it was this past year, too, and I just got the craziest look. And I don't even think they answered my question, really. They were just kind of like, okay.
Can you attach a skull to this?
I don't know. That's what it was. I was looking for like plumber flanges and pipes and everything so I can do some molding and casting and sculpting. And I couldn't even find the aisle for it. And they're like, what do you need it for? And I said, why? And I said, oh, okay. Move on.
Yeah, I just... If it takes me an hour, I'll walk around, an extra half hour so I don't have to talk to anyone and embarrass myself.
So one of my questions is, I know, like, as a haunter, a lot of us, we pick a theme and we stick to it and more or less try to get better at it or expand upon it. But you came up with Haunted Tiki Island, and I mean, there's obvious reasons why you could say I moved on to do a different theme, but how was that decision made that every 2 or 3 years you were going to pick a new thing and move on? Because it seems to be a big undertaking to have to do that all the time.
Well, when we started, we didn't think it was a big undertaking. Haunted Tiki Island was kind of like some tikis, some skulls on stakes, so pretty simple props.
Yeah.
A lot of that ground covering netting. And then just a bunch of zombies, and we didn't even have to make costumes for our props. So it's like one guy had two guys had like loincloths, and that was it. So like our costuming costs were like $2 and scraps.
Two guys and loincloths are scary enough, right?
Yeah. And then, we made a lot of stuff. We take something from the dollar store, like, flowers, and glue an eyeball into it and paint it black light. And, that was our jungle.
Yeah.
Spray painted like some nylon rope screen, and those are vines. And then we just hot glued leaves onto it and just kind of, each little thing we took something cheap and just tried to expand on it. We made a lot of great stuff, monsters, PVC armatures and cardboard and great stuff. And
I think
all the skulls.
I think that's one of the things that most people know you for, though, because I mean, when you moved into Carnival of Risk and you did your sideshow of oddities there, a lot of those creatures, whether they're made by yourself or Patty or other people in your crew, your family members, they're pretty cool. I mean, they're all handmade, and I think, that's definitely something that I think you're known for, is the originality there. I mean, how does everyone contribute to those? I mean, is it mostly your idea to do those kind of things?
Let me answer that question in two parts.
Okay.
First part is we do make almost everything by hand because we're not cheap, but we're not rich either. And we're real picky, so, if we make something that doesn't look so great, we're still happier. It's more like what we wanted than probably what we could find at a store.
Yeah.
And then at the store, props can be like, good ones start at like $100 and go up to $1,000.
Yeah.
And then as far as to who makes what, we finally decided this year I'm the art director of the haunt. But because I've been called a prop Nazi and a pat, I'll come up with the general theme of the haunt and which area is going to be which, and then I'll just say, if you want to build, we'll kind of break up who's going to build what for what areas so that we don't have, 20 props in one area and none in the other, and then kind of distribute it. And then it's just, you know, make whatever you want, but make it fit the theme.
Yeah.
So, I think 2008, you know, was the first year where we didn't start 20 days before Halloween. And Patty made, like, the Tiki family, where they all kind of look like...
they had the glowing eyes, and they kind of...
Yeah, what's the... Oh, it's from one of those movies. I can't remember.
Like the Shrunken Heads?
Yeah, it's one of those movies, like Tales from the Dark Side, where, like, the third one... Planet of Terror, I think.
Oh, yeah, with Terror? The little Tiki guys running around.
Yeah, yeah, that was her inspiration. So she made the Tiki family based on that. And that was the year I made the Cauldron Creep. So, you know, I did one side of the yard and she did the other. And we just kind of broke it up. Like, I made all the freaks and jars and stuff for the Carnival Risk. And then she made at least two of the sideshow people. And then between the third one, Mr. Electra, was between my wife, Kendra, and me and Patty. Like, I started the armatures and set the pose, helped them set the pose, and then Kendra did the whole body and Patty sculpted the face.
I love that guy. I love how you use the cornstarch and everything to make him real kind of... I don't even know how to explain him, but...
Oh, yeah, to make his pants.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just be sagging on top of a PVC armature.
Not to really switch gears, because I'm kind of almost going through each of these haunts, but you mentioned the Cauldron Creep, and I got to bring him up, because you see so many interpretations of him now on YouTube. I don't know if you go on YouTube a lot and look up these things, but, I mean, he's probably become one of the most popular props on every haunter's to-do list now. I mean, how does that make you feel to know that you made something that made such an impact like that in the haunt community? Because he's such a cool prop. And, I mean, this whole past week I was looking at, I don't know, countless videos of all different people that made him. I mean, what's that like for you?
I've never been a grandpa, but it makes me feel like grandpa or like a dad or whatever, like seeing all these little Cauldron Creep kids popping up over the internet, you know? And when I started making Cauldron Creep, I wasn't trying to, like, create the next big prop. I couldn't figure out how to make it look like the regular Staring Witch. You know, the first time I started it up, that stick whipped around and, like, hit me in the face and then knocked the head off the Cauldron Creep and ripped off one of the arms and just fell apart. So I'm like, all right, I got to figure this out because, you know, it's like 2 weeks of Halloween. So I held the stick while it spun around. It's like, how do I do this? And I'm holding the top of it, and it's stirring in a pattern just like I wanted to. I was like, that's it. I'm just going to make this one arm. It's going to hang off this one arm, and then the other one will just kind of follow it around. And that's how that idea of, you know, the way his stirring works out started. And then I just... You know, witches don't go with tikis. But I wasn't really, you know, I hardly knew anything about sculpture, so I couldn't sculpt a witch doctor, which is more like what I kind of first drew.
Yeah.
So I just made him like a skeleton and rags, and he's going to have a headdress and stuff, but I ran out of time, and once I saw the way he looked, I was like, good enough? You know, that's the look. I'm not going to mess it up anymore.
But you've since started to learn more and play with more sculpture techniques and everything since then, though, haven't you?
Yeah, that was 2008, I think, is the first time I ever tried sculpting stuff. And I had a good job back then where I was pretty fast at what I did, so I could finish like an hour or two early each day. So I would just watch constantly how-tos, videos of people sculpting, tutorials on all these different websites, shiftlitbrothers.com, and I think that's where I learned the most from those guys, because I was starting out with Super Sculpey, and they always work in Sculpey, so, you know, yeah. I googled Super Sculpey and they showed up. They make awesome, like, fantasy figures, and I learned how to build armatures and create textures and stuff. So I just, each prop I tried to add onto what I knew, try, you know, oh, I saw this how-to today, let me try and add that onto here, and then just started exploring different materials and stuff, and it just kind of went from there. It's one of those things. If you ask me, would I ever be good at sculpture of all the creative things in the world, I'd be like, no, I suck at that. My proportion's terrible, and you know, I have carpal tunnel syndrome, and you know, I don't think I'd be any good at sculpture. But that's the sculpture and painting seem to be the ones that I excelled at. So I was, you know, and being surprised that I was good at it really pushed me to try more and more stuff. So
I think that's the best thing, one of the coolest things about Halloween, and I think probably why so many people like it, right? I mean, because it's hard to mess up making a monster, because there's almost, I mean, yeah, there's proportions and everything, but sometimes they're exaggerated or thrown out the window a little bit, so it's a little less intimidating for, I guess, the quote-unquote less creative, you know,
natural. Beginners.
Yeah, beginners. Okay, that's the nicer way to put it, right? The better.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're starting out with monsters,
yeah.
If you're trying to do a human face, everyone knows what that looks like, because you see millions of them.
Yeah.
You stare at them all day long, you know exactly what they look like. But with a monster, you know, unless you're doing, like, Frankenstein from the movies or a famous one, no one knows what it's supposed to look like. I would say, you know, most of the monsters in my head never show up that way in real life, but then a lot of times I like what I did in real life better, so I don't even try to do tight sketches anymore. I just, you know, scribble on a piece of paper, and I'm like, longer nose, shorter nose, bigger eyes, smaller eyes, and kind of that's it, you know. I don't sit there and like, oh, let's shade it in and make it detailed and it's got this many fangs or whatever. It's like, all right, big nose, small eyes, tiny Tyrannosaurus Rex arms, big fat legs, and that's it.
I think
and then just build from there.
Your sketches are pretty cool, though. I mean, I have to say, I come from a design and illustration background myself. I don't know if you have any training at all, but I mean, I'm staring right now at the Witch King sketch that you did in the Book of Names, where he's kind of hunched over in his chair. He's got the horns on his head. I mean, that's a pretty cool sketch. I mean, do you have a background at all in this stuff, or is it just something where, just like sculpting, it's just something you've been practicing at and do?
Well, I went to college for photography. I wanted to be an illustrator when I was a teenager, because I was like, no, I wasn't a good student. My parents didn't really think I was going to amount to anything. But I was like, I could be a professional artist. I'm going to be an illustrator. And then to be an illustrator, you have to take, you know, basic photography classes and other stuff like that, you know, as part of your basic education. Then when I did photography, I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And I'd sit in the library between classes looking at photo books. And then I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. So then I decided I switched my majors, and I was, you know, right at the beginning, I was going to community college to save some money, and so I switched before I went to full-time college, and that's what I did. So I had a few drawing classes, but I was kind of a bad student. You know, I've been doodling in church my whole life, so you couldn't really teach me how to draw. So that's why I say my proportion's bad. But I've kind of learned to draw because, you know, I work in the creative industry, and the production side, so I gotta like sketch things out for some people sometimes, and they're like, I can't picture it. I'm like, well, let me draw you a picture. And I have a lot of production meetings that are boring. That's where all my best sketches are from. Well, I think you might even see it if you look at some of the pictures. It'll be like, this guy's an idiot, and then like press check on Thursday, and then it'll be like, you know, Carver Creep should have an axe this big. <You know? laughs>
No, they're really cool. I mean, it's something I appreciate so much in seeing, because you really do detail every step of the way, you know, just those initial sketches and concepts and kind of that thought process. I mean, that's what I love seeing the most about it, you know, why I love the internet so much for haunting. It's just because, you know, someone like yourself is showing how your creative process is to make these things, and it helps someone like me, you know, think in the future, hey, you know, maybe if I started with a sketch and I really try to develop this thing, I wouldn't be rushing the day of Halloween to try to finish a freaking prop. So,
but there's a flip side to that, though, because I had drawn them out so well, I didn't even build him this year because I was like, I don't have time to do that. I know what he's supposed to look like, and I know how much detail he needs, and I know what people are expecting because I showed people I shouldn't have shown him. And then I was like, screw it. I'm just going to put more detail into these props that I already done. I'll just, you know, bring them in next year.
But, I mean, if that's going to bring us up to Witches of Scavtree Hollow, I mean, you guys did an amazing amount of work. I mean, to me, that Confession House alone, I mean, that I think any haunter would just be happy to have that sitting on their front lawn. I mean, how do you guys manage to pull off so much in such a short amount of time, especially a build like that house? I mean, how did that all come together?
Well, I got lucky. So when we started out, we had, like, you know, all the brothers and sisters, and mom was helping out. And then over time, you know, like Zach, my brother-in-law, he got a job where every year he has to travel to Las Vegas for the week of Halloween. So he can't make it. So, you know, then he doesn't want to work on it, which is totally understandable because, you know, why put in all that work if you can't even see it put up?
Yeah.
And then, you know, then his wife kind of goes like that, and that's fine. So we've kind of been changing around. And this year, well, almost didn't happen except for two things. I got laid off from work, and my father-in-law was like, you know, he's been kind of sneaking it. He's Patty's ex-husband, so he's been kind of sneaking into the haunt on the edges, like trying to come and he'll come over and help paint while she's at work or whatever, or he'd, like, stand outside the yard and, like, talk to us. So, you know, I said, I'm going to build it. It's my house. You want to come over and help? And he's like, oh, I'd love to. So, and it was just like 2 days a week for like 2.5 months, maybe 3 months straight. We, you know, he'd come over and we'd build coffins or work on that house or build a torture table or whatever. And we had a really good time because, you know, he probably lives like 1.5 hours, 2 hours away. And we don't see him very often, so it was a good time for, like, father-in-law and son-in-law to bond. And we just have a good time laughing and joking and building stuff. And so that's, you know, part of it was, like, you know, we had unfortunate events. I got laid off, but then he wanted to come over and hang out, so we just made the most of it, you know, instead of being depressed or saying we can't do it, you know, just use scrap wood where we could find it and scrimp and save and try and think of faster, cheaper ways to put it together. And we just barely pulled it off this year. I thought we were totally going to blow it. I was like, this is it. This is the end.
I don't know, man. I mean, maybe it's your skillful photography background, but the pictures look amazing. That's all I can say. And if anyone hasn't checked them out, just go to Helzondo Haunt. .com or .blogspot, right? And check out these pictures. It's crazy. I mean, I know when you take pictures, I mean, obviously as a photographer, you could definitely help those pictures be a lot better, but I've always appreciated the the lighting that you do as well. And there's so much of it, from the black light area, even, you know, seeing the red light peeking in through the slats in the confession house. I mean, how long does that take you to do the lighting for it as well? What kind of lights do you use? I mean, is it all floodlights? And I mean, how much are you tricking us with your photography?
For photography, I do almost no tricks because I photograph it, you know, it's not at my house, so it's only set up for and open for 2 days. So I photograph it, you know, everyone goes in after 10 o'clock and, you know, gets out of their costumes. I'll have slices of pizza and then I'm out in the yard till 3:30, 4 in the morning taking pictures. I just use a digital camera and one of those SLRs, not even high end, just a Rebel and a tripod. And I just I bracket my shots, you know, so I over and under expose because, you know, some lights are brighter than others. Then I just process them in RAW, which is just, you know, lets you lighten and darken things. Adobe Camera RAW, so, which isn't like Bridge or Photoshop. And then I don't really do any retouching to them, you know, like I'll take out an extension cord or something I couldn't hide, or like a there's this crosswalk sign that shows up in all the coolest pictures. So I take that out because it drives me nuts. And then that's it. As far as lighting, we just use the colored spotlights from Home Depot. And, you know, over the years they've changed and I've kind of, you know, like semi-wrap up very carefully because like, oh, you can't get these anymore. Yeah. I really like the color this makes. And I never quite, we always run out of power, so I don't have quite as many lights as I'd like to. So if you looked at the haunt compared to the pictures, it looks good in real life, but it's probably a little underlit because when I'm taking pictures, you know, I can turn off the blue light from the graveyard if it's getting in this picture, or, you know, turn the green light, you know, a little more.
Yeah.
So this looks better, so it's not shining into the camera or whatever. So we kind of have like the mood is probably the same when you walk through the haunt, but I'd have to move some stuff just to take pictures so that I don't have like a spotlight shining in my camera while I'm trying to photograph something. But it's all pretty basic. And I also like the new light bulbs I like to use are those colored compact fluorescents.
Mm-hmm.
They just have such a rich color to them. A lot of the floodlights are, you know, they're tungsten bulbs or whatever, and they have that kind of orange-red color to it. Then they put the color coding over it, so you have kind of, you know, if you put blue or green over that orange-red, you get kind of, you know, you get a duller blue or green. So I like that in some things. You know, I'll use those older-style floodlights, and if I want something really rich, I'll use the new ones with the compact fluorescent bulbs inside. Those give you insane color, but I think the other thing I use is I just make little handmade LED spots. Some of them are just, you know, a 9-volt battery with a wire taped to it with a LED on the end, you know?
Uh-huh.
It just looks like it's just an LED on a wire on taped to a battery. But those are small and you can wrap the wire around stuff so you can wrap it around someone's arm or stick it around a tree branch or whatever and no one sees it and lights stuff up, but
great.
And then black lights, you just blast everything with black light. And, we're always like, oh, this looks terrible, you know, when we're setting up the black light area, because it does look terrible under regular light, but when you turn those black lights on at night, it's like instant. It's like, even I think the effect is even worse on us. We're just stunned by, you know, stuff glowing. We're like, ooh, shiny.
Yeah, that whole little walkway you have with all the little pumpkin groundbreakers and everything, it's awesome. That's really cool. So it's not just a static display. You guys do get dressed up. There is a theme. How do you guys run the haunt the night of? I mean, when people are coming, do you get a lot of people? And then how do you kind of orchestrate everyone going through? I mean, do you really try to scare them? Is it, what, can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so each year we have more and more people. I think last year we had 700 to 800 people, because we live in the haunt's in a neighborhood. Patty lives in a neighborhood where lots of other people will decorate their houses, you know, the graveyards and mad scientist lab and, you know, the house where there's just everything out on the lawn that was ever sold in a Halloween store.
Yeah, I have quite a few of them where it's the house that Halloween threw up on, kind of thing.
Yeah. And their Nightmare Before Christmas haunt right across the street, so we get a lot of traffic. This year, I think we went way over 1,000. We tried counting with one of those little clicker things.
Yeah.
And halfway through the night, it was like no one could keep clicking it because people were lining up out down the sidewalk and like out into the street, like out into the middle of the street. And I had to like run out and be like, come on, let's go back on the sidewalk. You can't line up out here because when you do, the police come and then the haunt gets shut down and then you don't get to go through. And, you know, so I'm like trying to hurt, you know, put my arms out and just like push all these cows, you know, back into the field. Just come on, move.
Is that why you had who's the guy in the one picture? He's got the, he's standing near the little hangman nooses and he's got the bell in his hand.
Oh, that's Uncle Bobby.
So was he hurting the people with his bell?
He was kind of, he's hurting people out. Because we have one gate in and out, so we kind of like at that gate we have it diverge into two lanes where there's the line people queuing up to get in,
mm-hmm.
and then we have a little exit area where we just kind of try and speed people out of it, and then at the end we'll hand out the candy, because we used to do the candy in the middle maze, and then everyone would stop in the middle of the maze, and, like, ask questions and, like, tell everyone how great they thought we were. It's like, just, you know, we got to get them through the maze. So.
Thank you. Go.
He does the candy at the ends and hands out flyers for, like us on Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, what we do, this is our first year, so we're building new stuff. We didn't really put as much into the driveway as we wanted to. And we realized this year with, like, people going out to the street, we need to make, like, a themed queue area for people to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So usually we just line them up in the driveway and we'd have, like, some ropes we'd kind of get them to go back and forth, you know, maybe fold up like a C or an S. And then we send them in four or five at a time. And then in the yard, we don't have a lot of scares. Now with the confession house, that's the first scare. So you walk right in, bam, there's like three people working it. So they can get you from any side. Then you walk out through the graveyard, and there's a scare there that we didn't plan. People just kind of figured it out, because all the people in witch costumes realize they look like the Grim Reapers, you know, if you can't see their face. So they just stand next to them like they're another one of those props, and then they turn around and go, boo! And it just nail people. We didn't even plan on that being in there. Then you, when you go into the, this year it's a tree, but before it was the clown's head or whatever, mm-hmm. Rasputin's head. We have some drop panels in there. We made them look like coffins, like toe pinchers.
Oh, cool.
And then the middle board slide down. So there's a couple of those, because you walk on a little bridge. And that bridge takes you from the grass part of the yard over to the porch. Normally, you'd have to walk through the flower bed. So we made a little bridge that so we could go through the flower bed, kind of loop back to the porch. Then the porch is where we had the wall of coffins with the... There's a talking skeleton in there. And then you turn left and you go into the blacklight area. And we don't really scare people in the blacklight area because they're spacing out. And either you can't scare them because they don't even notice you're there, or you scare them into the wall, which is not a good technique. So we try and make that last part like a cool down.
Gotcha.
And then when you get out of there, that takes you right back to the gate where you came in. So then, you know, we'll be holding people at the gate and let people out and then put the next group through. So it's kind of, before it started out as a display where it's just stuff to look at and you walk through, probably all the way to, I think, yeah, 2009, 2007, 8, and 9, it was just a display. Even though you walked through the volcano in 2009, no one scared you inside. And then everyone's like, we want to scare people. So 2010, we added drop panels, and we added some firecrackers, you know, those electronic firecracker things to the firecracker booth. And then with the confession house, found out that people were, you know, characters were just out there hitting it with rocks or whatever, you know, anything they could to make a loud noise. And, you know, of course, I come out in the morning, and there's like four panels coming off and, you know, parts completely broken in the window frame, but it's cheap to fix. But it was just like, you know, I heard all this banging. What was going on? And they're like, oh yeah, they were hitting it with rocks.
Oh geez, is it built in a way that, you know, you can assemble and disassemble it easy? Like, I mean, for next year, I mean, is it, we'll be able to put it back together? Kind of. I mean, how'd you create it?
Yeah, we made it so it's 1, 2, 3, 4. 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 panels, and then like the roof rafters. Everything's kind of modular. So nothing's bigger than a 4x8 sheet of plywood. So it's like a 2x2 frame, and then we put some like quarter inch bolts between, you know, drilled through one frame to the other, and we bolt it together. And then we shimmed it up, but we screwed the shims onto the bottom and left them there. Because, you know, when we built it in at my house in Canoga Park, and then took it over to Patty's house in Simi Valley. So we weren't sure, you know, when we were putting up, I was like, is this just going to fall over? Cause you know, your yard's sloped so that rain doesn't run into your house. It runs out to the street.
Yeah.
But I think it takes maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes to take apart. That's, you know, nice, the roof rafters are all single pieces and they bolt right in. So it's like walls. Now put up one wall, then you attach the next wall to it, and then put the rafters across, and then put the steeple on. Steeple doesn't break down. That's the hardest part because it weighs about 100 pounds.
Oh, jeez.
So trying to carry it up a ladder is a pain in the butt, but...
It's impressive. It's really cool. It's definitely something. It caught my eye immediately. So, I mean, this is year one. Do you think you're going to carry this theme on for 2-3 years now? Is that the hope?
Because you asked earlier about, you know, we're going to change... How do we decide to change themes? Because when we started out, we had a lot of people, so we thought we could change themes. And, you know, from Tiki Island to Rasputin's Carnival Risk, you know, we had a lot of people on board building, and we got everything, you know, we got that carousel made and the head and the drop panels and all the booths. But, you know, we have less people working on it each year, so I think now that we're in our third theme, we changed themes because, you know, we want to make new stuff, and we kind of run out of room after 3 years.
Yeah.
But now that less people, I think we might extend these themes to 4 years just to get an extra year out of them, and because we can't build as fast as we used to. But, you know, as we've been going longer and longer, more people are coming by and volunteering to help. So each year we'll see. You know, we got people who volunteered to, you know, just come on Halloween night and the night before and scare people, which was great because we're, you know, some of those people had gone away. So we're like cycling in new people as old people cycle out. So who knows? We're going to try and keep changing the thing because it's fun, but we might extend this one another year just to, so we have time to enjoy it before,
yeah,
you know, it's, we move on to the next one. And, you know, just so we can rest because this year was, so exhausted. I mean, every year I get, like, the day before Halloween or two when I'm setting up and, like, you know, that screw won't go right back in or that thread won't go on that bolt. You just, like, want to, you just, like, kick something over and you're like, fuck all this Halloween. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you could, hey, we're not a PG-friendly radio
like,
show.
Fuck it. I hate Halloween. I'm done. I hate all these people. I wish I had a different family. They all mad at me because I've been mad at them. And, you know, why can't people do things right? Or, you know, where the fuck is my screw gun, you know? You know, where's my cordless drill? Someone else is like, what? I got it over here.
I think that's why I'm down to just myself creating my own haunt now, because too many people just couldn't deal with the Nazi directions over and over and over again. My wife.
Yeah, well, you want it to look a certain way, but also it's just so much stress, you know. I like, and I feel bad about it. I'll like start barking at people, and I'm like, oh man, I know I'm not a good leader. I'm not a good leader. I need to mobilize these people for success, and I'm just hurting their feelings.
It's got to be hard, though. I mean, in my eyes, you've built up a reputation, and you know, everyone kind of knows you're going to put on these amazing displays, and like you said, year after year, you count more people are coming. So it's almost, you almost feel a responsibility to them to have something amazing to put up. You know, do you ever feel pressure like that? I mean, do you sometimes feel like it's always fun, I guess, when it boils down to it, and you stand back and you look at everything. But do you ever feel that kind of pressure or stress to do this?
Personally, I'm always stressed to do better than what I did last time, just to make myself happy. Not even, you know, it's like a trying to better myself. And I know that people want to come see it, and, you know, I want to put something on, but to make it better each year, I'm like, half of it's pushing myself, and the other half is what can I get past my wife and mother-in-law, you know, like, if I had given them a scale drawing of that confession house, they both would have said no. I was like, you know, I'm like, hey, Bill, you know, my father, I'm like, oh, we really got to like get this halfway up before Kendra gets home from work today. You know, she's going to call the kibosh on that and we're not going to finish it. You know, we do a lot of stuff like, let's just try and build this before Kendra gets home. Yeah, or don't show anyone until we get to Patty's house.
So they really won't have any kind of a way to tell you to not do it because it's already there.
They're reasonable people.
Yeah.
I think part of what, when you make something that's great, and this is just something I've discovered, like in 2009 we made that walkthrough volcano, and that's not the greatest walkthrough, but that was a big step up for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time we had the covered area with the black lights and the bridge that took you from the yard, because otherwise you just did a little circle in the yard and you went out. it was those kind of crazy things that were a little unreasonable that really pushed the haunt to the next level. But I know for sure, you know, making a haunt that people are going to like the neighborhoods, that's super important to Patty and Kendra, and even Patty's husband, Joe. He's, you know, he doesn't really like Halloween. He doesn't like the mess that it brings to his house. But when people come over and like, are you doing the haunt this year? And he's like, yep, we are. And then he'll sit there, he'll talk to him for like half an hour. Like, oh yeah, we're doing this. And I got a giant head. And, you know, he doesn't tell him that, you know.
It's funny how
he talks stuff over when we leave it out just to spite us or whatever.
It's funny how quickly people's opinions change of a holiday, though, when they're getting the positive attention like that. It doesn't take much, and you all of a sudden feel that sense of pride in everything that's going on.
Yeah, and I know that Patty's super. She takes a lot of pride in it, and she works really hard. She only made 2 props this year, but she made like 15 costumes, which was an insane amount of sewing. That's the thing. This year, I thought, oh, it's going to be easy. We're just going to make a bunch of props, and all I got to do is make heads and hands because they're all going to be wearing costumes. But that was easy for me to say because I wasn't sewing costumes.
Can you pick out one your most favorite part of this year's haunt? The one prop that stuck out the most to you?
I think my favorite ones was the witches burn at the stake. There's one in you can see in the pictures framed through the doorway of the confession house.
Yeah.
And we used styrofoam, dummies or whatever, mannequins. Someone gave us a half one, so we used that for the bottom. And then I built the top in scale to that, and the proportions came out so right when I would walk by that when I was taking pictures after Halloween at night. It would just, you know, give me the creeps. It's like, I know that's not real, but I can't see that it's fake from here. And, you know, I'd take like an extra fast step through the doorway to get through the confession house when I'd walk by it. And I don't think that's my best one. What's your best one? I don't know. I like the pumpkin creeps, the pumpkin groundbreakers, but I also like the witch's heads. I'm not 100% happy with the witch setup yet. I wanted to have them all talking 3-axis skulls and like them pouring potion into the cauldron and whatever. But
I definitely like I like your the watcher. I think you call him prop. The one.
I forgot about him. Okay, he's my favorite.
Oh, jeez.
I got mad because the mechanism that made his arm move broke.
Oh, it did?
Setting him up, and I didn't have time to fix him. So I totally like put him in the back of my mind. It's like, I have to fix him and get him working next year. He worked 2 days before Halloween, right before I brought him over. You know, I set him up in the yard because he was going to be on the patio first, so he had like a stand.
Mm-hmm.
But when we put him in the grass, I changed his feet to like stakes, you know, pound the stakes in and then stand him up on the grass. And I did that at my house and turned him on. It's like, all right, everything's great. Get him over to Patty's house and then, you know, that mechanism's spinning, but the arm's not going anywhere.
I really like the whole faceless kind of look to him, you know, had that very Guillermo del Toro kind of creature kind of thing in Hellboy.
Yeah,
that little section.
Kendra did a post on him on our blog, and she kind of threw in some pictures real quick because I just told her, you know, off the top of my head who to look for. But that faceless thing, ever since I was 5 years old, when I didn't even see Alien, I saw my friend's Alien toy, and I thought that is the most horrifying, awesome thing I've ever seen. And that, like, drove my creative stuff for a long time. Like, when I was, you know, when I wanted to be an illustrator, I was like, oh, I guess I'm going to paint fruit and cars or whatever, and it's going to be boring. But it's a job. Then I saw Giger's paintings, H.R. Yeah. Giger. They had one of his books at the comic book store, and you know, I got that for my birthday, and I was like, oh my god, this is what I want to do with my life.
Oh, man.
I don't know how, but you know, I started painting and drawing, you know, just like when you're a teenager, you copy, or a young artist, you copy your favorites. So I just drew alien like creatures over and over and over and over, so that's always been in my head. And then Wayne Barlow's Inferno, his big influence. You know, he, one of the things he has is a lot of those, they're illustrations of hell of like the political leaders and, or whatever, you know, Beelzebub and the devil and, mm-hmm. and all these other mythical creatures. And a lot of them have like these runes that either float over their head or are burned into their skin that glow. And I thought, that's what I first wanted to do when I made that watcher face, is like, I'm going to, you know, do this in black light and then try and paint it to look like it's burning, which just it looked like Fruit Loops. So that didn't work. And it's like, well, maybe I'll cast the skull in like clear resin and then I'll put a light in it. And then I was like, that's going to cost like $200. So I was like, all right, I'll just paint it white and black and, you know, just regular skull. And then I was like, well, that'll do it. That's good enough.
Yeah.
So I liked it so much, I made a few more. I made, I think, three more. I even have some stuff I didn't put out this year that from that thing. So I liked that idea of faceless death,
yeah.
especially how it tied in with the victims who have hoods over their head.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of what makes it even creepier. Like, it's even easier to... It's like an unhooded victim, you could kind of have sympathy with them more. You see their face, you would see their, even if it's a terrible prop face, you know, you look at their face and think that's a person. But with the hoods, it's even creepier because it kind of takes away their humanity.
Yeah.
Then even with the dead creatures, you can't look at their face. You know, it's just teeth and this blank spot or the runes written on there. So
that's really cool. So I guess a two-part question to kind of, to wrap things up, part one is more of, you know, you have a lot of experience behind you now with all the haunts you've created. Is there any advice that you would give to any haunters that are starting out or are still kind of trying to find their way through what they want to do in haunting? And part two is, you know, where do you see yourself going with Hell's Hondo Haunt? Is it something you just, you know, want to try to keep on continuing forever? Is there ever a notion of trying to take it to a professional kind of level? You know, can you kind of give us a little something with both of those?
Okay, yeah. So the first one I would say, and I get a lot of practice with this, like trying to talk Patty and my wife through making props. Because they'll be like, oh, it doesn't look as good as yours. You bet you think this looks terrible or whatever. It's like, it doesn't matter what I think. You know, it matters what you think. And it's, you know, they're like, is this done? I'm like, you know, or things like, or does this look good enough? And the question isn't, does it look good enough or is it done? It's like, you'll know when, you'll find, if you keep working on something, you'll find when it's done, it'll just kind of reveal itself to you. And what I was saying earlier about, you know, sketches, how I, you know, made the sketch of the Witch King, and then that kept me from building them because I didn't think he'd be good enough this year. Mm-hmm. Sketches are a good way for you to make a roadmap for what you want to do, or take looking at other people's work, collecting pictures you like, but don't, especially for myself, don't compare what you're building to that, because that just sets you up to fail. If you just work on it, you'll find ways to make it look cool, you know, things that you didn't think of. Either it'll be unfinished and you'll be like, I kind of like that. You know, I like how it looks with unpainted eyes. Or, you know, I was going to make it with red eyes, but I like it better with white eyes. Or, you know, I mush the nose, but kind of looks cool like a rotten zombie nose or a mummy's nose or something. You know, if you have accidents, go with it and don't be so rigid in trying to, you know, get that picture out of your head. It's more important what you make with your hands in the end, because no one knows what it's supposed to be unless you tell them. That's a completely different profession. You know, if you work in a special effects shop, someone else is going to draw it and you have to copy it in clay or whatever and make that happen. But you're a haunter, so you don't, all you have to do is make yourself happy. So that's my answer to the first one, is just keep working until it looks good to you. That's when it's done. And, you know, also you also have to understand that if it's your first time at anything in life, you're going to fuck up. So you just have to roll with it. You just like, okay, I like this, but I didn't like that. But, you know, keep that in mind, go on to your next prop, and just the more you build, the more experience you'll get, and that experience is what's going to help you figure out, you know, like I said, you'll know when it's done, is to be like, you'll know when the mouth is done, and you can move on to the eyes, or vice versa, or so on and so forth. Good and advice. As far as what I want to do with the haunt is, I'm not a capitalist by any means. I believe in free markets or whatever, but I'm not interested in trying to make money off my haunt. I want people to come to the home haunt. It's always free and enjoy it. We put out a donation box because my father's like, we worked really hard. We should get some for this. And I was like, okay. So he built a little tiny coffin like the last hour before we opened out of scrap wood and put it out. And, you know, we got some good donations. So that was, you know, it made us feel good, but that's not why we do it. You know, we just do it for fun and the fun other people have. You know, that's the payoff, you know, when people, you know, come by during the year and they're like, oh my gosh, my little brother said that your haunted house was the scariest thing you ever saw, and that all he does is talk about it. You know, that's worth more than, like, people paying $20 a ticket to get in or something.
Yeah.
And we would like in the future, there's this fundraiser haunt that we drive by every day on the way to work at one of the colleges that is kind of terrible. We're like, we should take that over. You know, we can make that cool and turn it into a profitable business, but, you know, profitable fundraiser. But if we ever go pro, my only interest would be to do it for charity or fundraising. I don't want to try and make a living or have a business or even have a part-time business, because there's too much, to me, it's too much work, blood, sweat, and tears to just do it for money.
Yeah.
And that's some kind of like artsy-fartsy communist pinko bullshit. That's what I want out of it, and that's what I get. That's all I need out of it. I don't need, if someone gave me $20 and I thought the haunt looked like shit, I wouldn't feel any better. Like, this haunt is great. I'd pay $30. I'm like, oh, shut up.
I think that's good. I mean, for the people I've spoke to so far, as you know, most, I mean, geez, okay. I've only had 3 interviews so far, but I mean, everyone seems to really, even those I haven't interviewed, it's always about the love of just doing it. It seems to be, especially for the home haunters. So it's cool to hear from you too. I mean, doesn't matter what level you're at. I mean, you're having fun doing it. You know, your haunt looks amazing. It's inspirational to myself, and I'm sure a lot of other people out there. And I'm just happy that you guys keep on going with it. You know, just it's like Christmas Day. To go onto your blog and see the pictures. I'm hoping for a video. I don't know if, are you putting out a video this year?
Yeah, I've been editing it.
Yeah.
I'm just so tired after the you know, like June to October 31st is Halloween season. And then like, I guess it's probably till November 14th. That's about how long it takes us to put everything away. And then from November 14th till Christmas is video game season.
Any games you're looking forward to playing?
I've been playing new Battlefield 4. I've been playing that series since it came out in 1942. I want to play Payday 2, the one where you're bank robbers. Because these are all antisocial games.
I just want to shoot people in the face.
Yeah, I just want to shoot people and maybe stab them. I'll blow something up. No, but I've been trying to be better about it, because usually I won't do it until like Home Haunters video comes out, or the Haunt Form DVD. Yeah. So I'm just trying to get it out there sooner, because, you know, the new people in the haunt want to see it. And so I want, you know, I'm trying to keep new people who are helping with the haunt interested. So my new thing is to try and keep something interesting going on with the haunt, just for people who followed us, because we handed out flyers for Facebook for the first time this year, and something for other haunters. And all that, and the people who are volunteering to be in our haunt or want to, try and keep them interested in the haunt instead of just being lazy like I have in the past. Well, every year before this, where I just play video games for like 6 months, don't do anything with Halloween.
Stop being lazy, man. People like me get sad when we don't get to see anything. Jeez.
Well, I always said I'm going to build props in the winter instead of sweating it out in the garage in the summer, and I'm going to do that this year. just because, you know, I'm going to get a job, be employed again eventually, and that means, you know, it's hard to build a lot of stuff when you have a job. So
it's true. Like,
I got lucky, I had this extra time to build this, you know, the base of this haunt, so I'm going to try and this winter, you know, just start earlier, get in the habit of building things earlier so that no matter what my job is, because, you know, I've had jobs where I'm working 14 hours a day every day and I don't get home. It's like a 3-hour commute. So you don't get anything built. So I'm just trying, I'm trying to be less lazy is what I'm trying to say. So, and I need people to hold me to it.
I'll bug your ass every day if I have to. So, do you want to tell anyone that's listening out here, can you tell them where they can check you out? Like your, blogs that you have, the Facebook page, YouTube. Do you want to give any of that information out for us to, you know, check in and make sure your ass is doing work?
Yeah. So we have our regular blog. And it's just, HellizondoHaunt.com. So that's HellizondoHaunt.com. It's not, Elizondo is not a real word. So we're on Haven and Elizondo Street. So that's how we came up with Elizondo. And, so that's our regular blog. That's when we like get serious about social media and copying links and pasting them. You can also find us, I believe it's The Haunt at Elizondo on Facebook. Let me double check that link so you can find that page. Yep, it's called The Haunt at Elizondo on Facebook, and that's where we'll do our more casual and more often social media stuff, because everyone has a login to that, so they can just like take a picture or something and upload it or write something. You know, you don't have to. We're not very good. I'm terrible at social media, I'll admit it. And, you know, trying to center a picture on my real webpage drives me nuts, so I'll just put it on Facebook where everything's pre-formatted. and that's it. And then there's devilschariot.blogspot, and that's just where I post all the how-tos. So if you're looking for a how-to for a cauldron creep or anything I made a how-to on, I have a couple of sculpting ones. Those are on devilschariot.blogspot.com.
Cool. Well, Craig, I really appreciate you taking the time out to talk about everything you've been up to. If you're listening out there, definitely check out The Haunt at Elizondo. Craig, his family, his friends do an amazing haunt. And thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me and letting me blabber on.
Blabber.
Blabber. And talk over you. That's my favorite part.
That's the best part.
Yeah.
Because who wants to hear me? I'm just the host.
Yeah.
I don't have a part in the show. So it's good.
All right. Good.
Merry Christmas. Ho, ho, ho.